Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Talking Records Podcast. This is an album deep dive show where we take an album and try to round up everything we can about it. We're interested in the backstories, the experiences, the context under which the album was made. I feel like hearing about how albums are made provides me with such a deeper connection to the music. And maybe you too. And that's why you're here. So welcome, welcome. My name is Jed, and this is Talking Records. In a moment, we're going to be joined by the guys from Eye Against Eye, Ronald, Jasper, Bob, who released Head Cleaner on Epitaph in 1998.
Make sure you check out Talking Records on the net. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Talking Records Podcast. We're also on Facebook and Twitter, or X. You can also drop us an email at talkingrecords@outlook.com. These are all great ways for us to connect with you over all this great music.
Eye Against Eye, who hail from the Netherlands, formed in the mid-90s. The band caught the attention of Epitaph Records and were signed to the label. I discovered the band on the Punk-O-Rama 3 compilation that came out in 1998. As a huge fan of the label and the bands I had discovered on Punk-O-Rama 2, like The Descendants, Rancid, NoFX, and Pulley, Punk-O-Rama 3 was like another wave of new bands to check out. I had snatched up nearly everything that had come out of my fondness for the second comp, and now here were bands like All and The Bouncing Souls, H2O, and of course, Eye Against Eye, adding bands to the list of things I wanted to check out. Eye Against Eye, along with Oscar and the Voodoo Glow Skulls, were some of the standouts. Eye Against Eye had a straightforward approach and delivery. They had a crisp punk rock tune in Ordinary Fight that was fun to listen to and carried an important message. The band reminded me a little of my beloved No Use for a Name, crossed with Bad Religion. Ron and Bob's vocals were right in that comfortable range for me as a listener, as I was quite turned off back then by anything high-pitched or whiny. I quickly ordered the band's album Head Cleaner and spent the fall of 98, as a freshman in college, tightly clinging to my favorite band in this huge transitional time in my life. I really relied on these bands to be there for me, almost like a physical presence. I did a lot of jogging back then for some reason, and this record and High Standards' Angry Fist were almost constantly on repeat. I don't know if it was the BPMs or what, but it was just great jogging music. The songs were memorable, the vocals were tight, it was a good-sounding record, and it's always stuck with me. Here to chat about Head Cleaner are Ronald, Bob, and Jasper. Welcome to Talking Records, guys. Let's go around the room really quickly. Who are you and what do you do in the band?
My name's Jasper. I play the drums.
My name is Bob and I play the bass. And a little bit of backing vocals.
Hi, I'm Ronald. I'm the lead singer and I play guitar.
Welcome to the podcast. Super excited to have you on here to talk about Head Cleaner today, an album from 1998. And before we get into that, though, if you guys could just give us like the brief history of Eye Against Eye, the quick and dirty.
The quick and dirty. We started in 1994. Mm-hmm. And basically, this was our first band. So we had to learn how to play our instruments as well as, you know, learn how to write songs all at once. Mm-hmm. The thing is, it got picked up really, really fast. Within a few months after we first practiced, we had our first shows, and it basically kept on going that way ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like an avalanche, right? I mean, we started playing a few shows, and at those shows, there were guys like, hey, you can come play another show with us. And yeah, it got really fast, actually. So we started doing the first demo. Was it the same year?
95.
95, right? Started doing a demo. started sending it around to a bunch of people, you know, like magazines or also booking agencies, stuff like that. Same story, basically. It got picked up really quickly, and before we knew it, we're, you know, talking to people from record labels, like, hey.
Wow.
Get our label out, and, you know, there's some weird conversations in there, but...
The fun thing is also that there are songs on the album. We wrote probably the first 6 months we even started playing together. So that's
oh wow.
The first things we came up with is on Headfinger. So that's no,
yeah,
it's cool. It's nice.
Actually, I think Time was one of the very first ones.
Yeah,
right?
Time was one of the first ones. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. And so, what was the scene like where you guys were from? Were there a lot of shows then, or was it hard to find shows?
Dordrecht was a cool place to be. You could play in every street corner. We also did play on some street corners. Really,
like literally.
One time we were walking to the, we were walking in the city, and there was a band playing at Hof, right?
Yeah,
Hof. And we we were passing by, and we know the people who were playing there, so we played two or three songs.
I think three, yeah.
So that was the scene around here. So you could play if you want. Yeah. That helped us a lot.
Yeah, there was a big music scene here at the time because it was like mid-90s and people were playing in bands because at that time, of course, music was booming by itself. A lot of people were playing in bands and a lot of our friends were playing in bands as well. So we started to see each other at gigs and, you know, started playing gigs as well. And it was really easy because everybody was helping each other out. Like, hey, we got a gig next week somewhere or there. Can you play as well? And, you know, stuff like that. It was pretty easy, actually, to start playing and get those miles behind you.
Well, that's awesome. It's like a nice community of bands. That's cool. You guys, you know, formed and quickly you had shows and you were writing songs. And who are some of, like, I know you guys are Dead Kennedy fans, right? And obviously you must be Bad Brains fans. But what were some of the bands that you were listening to around the time you formed Eye Against Eye?
Obviously Bad Religion was a huge influence. I remember when we were in the blasting room recording Head Cleaner and somebody was talking to us about all kinds of bands. And Bill said, forget about it. These guys only listen to stuff that sounds like Deck Nasty. And he was kind of right, actually. Because melodic punk rock was what we listened to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
That's awesome.
Bad Religion, Descendants, you know, stuff like that. And Deck Nasty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are great bands. Good influences.
I guess.
You were the first European band to be signed to Epitaph. So tell us how you got connected with Epitaph.
There was a couple of things were happening at once. There's a magazine that was from our hometown called Obscene. That was pretty, it was an underground magazine, but it was the biggest underground magazine. And they would go to shows and have a set up like a booth where people could get copies of the magazine. And one time we went with them to this festival, and next to us was Epitaph Records. So we gave our demo to the guys at the booth of Epitaph and asked them, you know, well, have people at the office give a listen to this, because we knew they were looking for European bands. A little later on, a friend of ours from a Dutch band called Cooper also went for a job interview. And he also gave them the demo tapes. Ah. Now they had two versions of that tape sitting there at the office. From what we've heard, they sent it to Mr. Brett. You know, he liked it enough to give the green light. That's how we got signed as the first band from Europe.
Well, actually, there's a bit of a fairy tale going around, and we never knew if it was confirmed yes or no. But supposedly, he listened to the demo and he just said, yeah, we're signed, guys. Straight away,
we like to believe that's true.
Yeah, hell yeah, these guys are great. Get them.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember what was on that demo? What songs were on that demo tape?
It was "Ordinary Fight." It was all songs that also ended up at Head Cleaner. So it's "Ordinary Fight," "Time," I think "Ideals," and "Utopia."
And "Ordinary Fight" would end up on the Punk-O-Rama comp. So that's cool that.
Yeah,
song went from demo to comp, and of course that's where I heard you guys on there. But nice.
Yeah, outside of the Netherlands, I think it's safe to say that 90% of people that know about us, they know us from that the video game.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The one thing I've always wondered about is, like, you know, I've seen, like, Eurotaph, and so what's the difference between, like, being on Eurotaph and regular Epitaph? I mean, and, like, how did you make the jump? I mean, is there anything to that, or is it just...
Well, the funny thing is, we only know the Eurotaph side of the label, because we've been to South by Southwest in 1998, and that was the only time we met people from Epitaph in America. And wow. Like all the other dealings we've had with the label were through Amsterdam.
So the first thing you released was the Top of the World EP on Epitaph Europe. Was that recorded separately, or are those the recordings that you did for Head Cleaner?
No, we did that separately. Thank God, because yeah, there's a huge difference. The good thing about it is, not to say too much negative stuff about it, but it made us realize what we didn't want.
Sometimes it's good to have that, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember when we got to the blasting room, Bill asked us to, well, play me the stuff that you've put out before, and we were listening to this. And he was sitting there, and he said, I think we can do better. So, separate recordings.
I thought so, but I can never tell if they're just different mixes. Do you remember what you didn't like about, was it just the mix, or was it the tones, or...
It was a lot. Well, yeah. To be fair, it's playing wise. I never played to a metronome up until Head Cleaner, and that's what you hear on that EP, for instance. But it's mostly it's the sound, it's so synthetic and thin, and
But well, you learned a lot.
Yeah, we were new to the studio, so that was all new at the time of the EP. So. It gets a bit of mileage before we got to the blasting room.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of want that under your belt before you go into the studio to do your full length.
Yeah. The demo we did that got assigned to Epitaph, it wasn't an effort. It just happened really easily. But as I remember, recording that EP was a struggle. Mm-hmm. But that was a huge difference.
The EP includes a cover of the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand. I always love that. You guys big Beatle fans?
Yeah. Nice. Well, it's pretty funny. It's the only cover we ever recorded. But I don't know if Paul McCartney liked this version. But... Get fun with it, though.
I mean, he's got to have the Top of the World EP, right? He's got to have it.
He's got it. I have to say, I was wondering this morning, why did nobody... around us at that point stopped us and said, guys, this is not a good idea. Take any other song, but don't do a Beatles cover.
Yeah.
You know, we were, 18 years old. So, youthful enthusiasm, I guess.
That's funny. Well, you know, a lot of their early songs are fast and kind of punky. So it's like, you know, it lends itself to that a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does.
Absolutely.
But like taking on the Beatles is it's a pretty bold move.
Yeah.
We're going to do Beatles. It's awesome though. So tell me a little bit about recording at the Blast Room. So you guys were at the Blast Room in Fort Collins, Colorado with Bill Stevenson and Stefan Egerton of All Descendants. How did you connect with those guys?
We met them a year before when Descendants came to Europe, and we were lucky enough of the four shows they did in Holland. We got the open up for them on three shows. So we already kind of met them and, told Stefan, oh, we'd love to come record. And Stefan was, yeah, sure. And never thought nothing of it. And then a little later we got signed to Epitaph, and that became a possibility. Mm. And I think it's even through Epitaph that the first connection was made. And
they're like, who do you guys want?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's actually what happened, right? They asked us, like, do you guys know where you want to record? And we just mentioned, like, oh, you know, Blasting Room sounds cool. And they were like, oh, yeah, we can arrange that.
We know those guys, yeah.
So yeah, we had to pinch ourselves.
That's so cool to be able to record like your heroes or the people you look up to, you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. But also, I remember when we got there, settled in, and then the next day, everything was set up, and then Bill said, "Well, go ahead, play something." So then,
Are you the
yeah,
drummer?
yeah, you're like, one of the best drummers in the world, from our favorite band of all time, is standing there asking you to play a song. Right?
Oh, I'd be so nervous.
Yeah,
Oh, yeah.
so are we, but that wears off after a couple of days because then you're just working,
Oh,
trying,
sure.
trying to make a record. Him and Jason Livermore, Bill and Jason did the recording. They really helped us through it. If the record's any good, it's a lot of it has to do with them helping us make it because we were really still, well, rookies, I guess.
Yeah, and what great coaches, yeah.
Bill's a cool guy because when he picked us up from the airport, he drove right to the Taco Bell, something like that. First,
Perfect.
eat something, and then we go to the studio. So he was really trying to get us relaxed. We were little, how do you call them? Leprechauns. We're jumping around. It's all new and stuff.
Yeah, hyped up. It's
Yeah,
exciting.
completely hyped. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, they helped a lot. Thank God.
And so it was probably Bill who convinced you. Did it take a lot of convincing to play to a click track, or were you game? Were you like, I
Yeah,
don't want to do that?
immediately because I want, you wanted the best record that it can be.
Yeah. Did you find it difficult to play along with it?
But you started before that, right?
Yeah, some songs it was easy, and then there were ones where it was really a struggle. And I remember when the three of us were having, I was there was this one song, I think it was the bottom, that had these little embellishments in the drum parts. And I thought, fuck it, I'm not gonna play those. I'm gonna just focus on, keeping time. And then Bob and Ronald were like, "What? You've changed the parts. Where's all the stuff you used to play?" And then Bill interrupted, and this was all in Dutch. And then Bill interrupted, and he said, "I know what you guys are saying." And he mimicked the whole conversation to a T. It was
That's
perfect.
amazing.
But he convinced me to try it with all the stuff, we came up, we wrote the
Yeah, he
song.
didn't want you to oversimplify.
No, exactly.
So what was the recording process like? Did you just do all the drums and scratch tracks, or did you try to keep some of that guitar and bass work in there while you were recording?
I think all the scratch tracks were ditched eventually. Actually, I'm pretty sure they were. So that was it. That was also a new thing for us where we record all the instruments separately.
Because on that demo, I'm sure you did them all at once, right? Like a
Yeah,
live kind
just
of.
us in a room, and the drums were behind two boards of plywood, and that's it. This was a first for us in that sense.
Yeah. And did you guys have ideas about how you wanted it to sound, like tones and stuff, or did you basically rely on their expertise?
I think what really wanted us to go to the blasting room was the Shades Apart record they did.
Oh, yeah.
We had heard some of the stuff they'd done, which wasn't a lot back then because they had done recorded Pommel in their own studio, but it wasn't mixed over there. Hagfish did a record that was recorded and mixed in the blasting room, which we already liked. But then the Shades Apart record came, and it was everything we wanted in a record because it sounded like a real band playing music in a room. Like, it sounded natural. So that was kind of what, we wanted to have Bill and Stefan do their magic and hopefully have it sound something like that.
Well, it must be nice for them, easy for them when you're just like, make it sound like this, and you hand them something they've already done, and they're like, oh yeah, okay, we have our notes from that.
Yeah, but the part we were still in the process of learning about how you say that. We were only 4 years writing, and so you're still looking for what fits and what doesn't fit. So.
Still feeling your way through it.
Maybe tomorrow we'll be here in time.
One of the things I always loved about this record is the vocal arrangements. Did you guys have a lot of that stuff worked out, or did you spend a lot of time in the studio kind of getting those back and forths and those harmonies together?
You take your sleeve and they just fall out. it's really that way.
It's actually like that. We just, from the day one that we started making music, that's what we did. We just started looking for vocal arrangements, like, well, not even looking. It came naturally, actually.
Yeah. So, just doing it in the rehearsal space.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the thing. When we got to the lasting room, all the songs were ready. You know, we as musicians weren't even ready. If suppose Bill would have said, look, this song, we should play it differently. Vocals should maybe be like this, then I don't think we could have done that. We just, what you hear on the record is what, you know, vocally what these guys came up with, Bob and Ronald, and that's how we laid it down.
Yeah, I agree. I think at that point, it's just we've been working on these songs for so long, and the way that they've been recorded is the way that we basically wrote them, and I don't think at that time we would have been flexible enough within our own capabilities to do something else.
Yeah,
because it was the first time in, you know, big studio making a record. So yeah, I think at that time, so basically the best record that we could have made at that time is actually what we made with Hat Cleaner.
Yeah, if Bill or Jason was like, oh, why don't you try this, you would have been like, no.
well, it's not because we didn't want to, because if they would have told us to I don't know,
like relearning it,
yeah play it naked so it sounds better, we would have been open to it, but we just didn't have the faculties to do that.
Yeah, we wouldn't have felt comfortable with it, I think.
Now, was it hard to come all the way over to America to just to record?
No, it felt like a big adventure for us.
Yeah.
First time we ever came to the U.S. No, it wasn't a challenge. It was something we looked forward to it enormously. I wanted to say it lived up to the expectations, but I think it exceeded them. Even. And it's fun because I remember on the last day we had 14 days to record and mix it. We had one day, I think the recording was done in like 13 days. So we had one day left. And then Bill said, you know what? I'm going to take you guys out to the mountains because making a record should also be fun. And I thought to myself, well, what are you talking about? This is the most fun I've ever had
in my
life already. You know? It was so cool of him to do that, to take us out into the mountains and show us around there. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
When were you guys out there? Were you out there in the winter, the summer? I'm trying to timetable this.
In October.
Oh, so fall. Nice.
Yeah. So during the day, it was quite nice, but then at night, it was freaking cold, and we slept in the
vocal booth.
Yeah.
Vocal booth. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And because there was so little time to make the record, what happened was we would record during the day. And then, like, at night after dinner, Stefan would come in and he would start mixing all the stuff we had done before. So while we were sleeping, he was in the control room mixing the record. So if you had to go to the toilet in the middle of the night, you'd see Stefan there doing his magic behind the board.
That's funny. And you always have, like, an ear on it, too, while you're sleeping. You're
exactly.
And some parts of the blessing room were still building construction, so it wasn't finished yet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, 98.
Yeah,
97. Yeah.
Like Jesper said, we were really the first ones almost to record that. So sometimes you're lying in a booth or somewhere around, and then you feel the wind coming through the roof, and
yeah, that's nice. That was what made it more special. You know, like in the middle of something, rather than a complete project where you just get on. It was like everything was just new to us. And everything that we, you know, stuff like this, where like, hey, the building wasn't finished, or in the middle of the night, you go to the bathroom and you hear your own music somewhere in the back, you know, that was awesome.
Plus, yeah. What's more is we were and are huge descendants and all fans. So, well, everything there just breathes history from those both bands. And I remember after like after the first day, Bill gave us the key to his house, which was down the street from the studio. And he says, yeah, it's where I live with Chad and some other guys. So I thought to myself, who's Chad? You know, who does he mean? So we go up to the house and Chad Price, you know, all singer, is sitting on the couch playing his guitar.
Hey there.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All had just done Mass Nerder, I think, a little bit before you guys came in.
Yeah, I think actually they recorded that right after we did.
Oh, it was after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Trying to get the time, the timeline straight, but I know they're around the same time.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, that's correct. Because after they finished it, they came to Europe to do that tour, and they asked us to open up for them. So on the Mass Nerder tour. Yeah.
He not only gave the key of his house, also his car.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
We drove around his truck.
I was going to ask you guys how you passed the time while you were recording. So it sounds like you got to get like free reign of the place a little bit.
Yeah, we went to the Rocky Mountains and played a show also.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. We had a...
Cool.
Yeah, we were finished recording, I think.
I think we were midway through, and then it was this at the Starlight in Fort Collins. You know, there were many bands orbiting around the blasting room, and one of them had a show there. And one of the guys in that band asked us to play as well, so we did.
Awesome.
Yeah, and Bill also came. And afterwards, he said, "Did we record these songs too slow? Because we were playing
live is
way
always
too fast."
That's funny.
During the show, yeah.
The album was always 5 minutes shorter when we play live.
Wow, we got through that one quick. You wrap up the record, and I think I read where you went with "Time" as the first single. So why choose "Time"?
I think because in Holland, well, before we signed to Epitaph, a bunch of labels, we had meetings with a bunch of labels, and all of them always came back to that song, and also in the press we had was always centered around that song. So I get for like people who are into this music, it's not the obvious choice.
It's a little more rocking as opposed to punk rock.
Exactly. So I think that had something to do with it.
Yeah, it's the obvious choice. Everybody was always talking about that song. So why not?
And I was wondering, you had mentioned earlier that was one of the early songs that you guys had come up with. I kind of assumed it was one of the later ones just because that song spoke more to your sound as you, you did the next album and the songs kind of were a little bit more rocking, a little bit more experimental. You guys never really stuck with just a straightforward punk sound. You would kind of take it in different directions sometimes.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, and that's an interesting theory, really. But "Time" and "Ordinary Fight" were the first songs we ever came up with.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it stands out, especially on this one. You know, if you relate it to the record that came after it, it makes sense. But on this one, it kind of stands out. But well, it's just what happened when we played together for the first time. I'd have to say though that this is the one song I think was better on the demo than on the record.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
This sounds really stupid and corny to say, but I think the vibe of the song was caught better on tape on the demo version than on this one. And maybe that's because we were, literally playing it live in a room on the demo as opposed to all the separate tracking that we did for Head Clean.
Yeah, I always thought about that. Like, how do you keep that energy when you're recording it instrument by instrument? I mean, bands do it, but to me, it's always like, how do you capture that live energy, you know?
Yeah, but the last album we recorded together again. So we did it all.
Yeah, we tried it all.
We tried it all, yeah.
It is one of the challenges. If you break down every instrument or every note on the record, then you do run the risk of losing a bit of that live feeling, I suppose. But to be fair, on most punk rock records, doesn't really matter, you know. It's like just crank up the volume and the pace and just go for it. And that can easily be done without, you know, having to play in a live altogether. So
yeah,
we talked about this with Bill, and one of the things that he said was, or I don't know if he said it, but it was the reasoning behind it, because we were so inexperienced. If you do it all separately, it's easier to make it. Whereas if you play, let us three all play at once, and somebody fucks up, then you have to.
Right.
Yeah. So it's
all over again. Yeah. It could take a long time.
It just made more sense to do it this way, because I know that, not to compare ourselves with them, but Descendants made some of their later records just playing live in a room too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but they saw it fit that, well, these guys, they don't have a lot of mileage yet. Let's just do it all separately.
Yeah, let's get it right and have it sound good.
Yeah.
We have to do something that just doesn't feel right. We have to invite us, but not of a common kind. These Nazis around us, keep making this day all blind. It's not an ordinary fight.
So continuing to look at some of these songs, we mentioned Ordinary Fight earlier. That was, you know, one of the first songs I heard by you guys off Punkorama 3. That was huge. I mean, that comp, getting your name out there, must have been huge. It's a song about violence and racism. Do you remember what sparked that song?
Ooh, not really. I think it's just one of those things that we were, you know, we're very opinionated on. And that was basically it. Just wanted to, you know, let people know how we feel about that. That was it. There's not really something that was treated, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but
no, I think you're right. And Ronald and I came from the same high school, and we had a history teacher who was really big on, World War II history and, how do I say it? The tenets of National Socialism, to quote Big Lebowski. So, yeah, it was something we had a strong opinion in that time. So,
yeah, there's a good mix of social conscious, you know, love songs, and then like inward, like reflection songs on this record. It's a good mix of different subjects.
Yeah, you gotta try real hard to get rid of them. Of all these old-fashioned ideas that you've been having about this music. Yeah, you gotta try real hard to get out of there.
I like Utopia. It's playing in bands. What prompted a song about just the hardships of playing in a band?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think the answer is probably obvious, but I want to hear it from you guys.
Yeah, it is obvious. I mean, when you start playing, an instrument, and you start talking about playing in a band, it's just like, hey, getting to perform on a stage and maybe even a bigger stage at some point, or maybe even conquer the world or whatever. You know, it's like all these not really realistic things, more of like things you dream about. But then you start playing in a band, and there's all these logistics involved in it. You know, hire vans, or you have to go to shows, and how do you even get there? And then you have to talk about money and promotion, and what? You just want to play a song, you know? That's basically what triggered that. It's like, all right, there's a lot more to this.
All that extra stuff, yeah.
And it's funny because we had only been a band at, I think, maybe 2 years tops when we did that one. So it wasn't like we had decades of experience with belt.
Yeah.
You found out pretty quick that there were some really tough parts about being in a band.
Yep.
I feel like The Bottom and Passed Me By are very closely related. Those songs to me always felt like they could be two parts to the same story.
I'm amazed that you pick up on that. It's hitting the nail on the head, really. Ronald did the lyrics to Pass Me By, and I wrote them for the other song, The Bottom. And I always felt that way. Like, it's the same subject, but, you know, written from two perspectives.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's amazing that you pick up on it.
I think you're first.
I've been listening to this record for a very long time. So tell us how you came up with Head Cleaner as the title for the record.
It's a lame story, but we were having a hard time coming up with a good album title. We didn't want to have it be self-titled.
Right.
And then I had, this wasn't the time I have, I need to explain this, where we still had tape players.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I had this cassette that you sometimes had to use to clean it said head cleaner, and you use it to clean your tape deck. And, I think 19-year-old brain said, whoa, the stuff we've been doing with this record is, getting all of this shit out of our system, cleaning our heads. So why not call it that?
Ah, all right.
Well,
I like that.
That's the story behind it, really.
Yeah. Just made sense.
One
of those things.
We all saw the tape, so it was really on there.
Yeah, head cleaner at the top, yep.
Of course, it took a meeting with the people at Epitaph Europe to get the double meaning, because they were making drawings of what also could be a head cleaner, if you know what I mean. But, we were Boy Scouts, so that didn't really occur to us at that point.
Yeah, you're like, what do you mean? There's innuendo involved here? Uh-oh. And the art concept, how'd you guys come up? I love this, the sepia-toned, close-up shots of the, you've got the head of the amplifier on here. And I always kind of was like, all right, we got the head of the, the drum heads on here, there's a bass. So how'd you come up with the concept for the art?
This involves the Beatles, too, because over here you had this cheap compilation of Beatles songs. I think it was Beatles Greatest or something, which basically has the same layout as Head Cleaner. So we took that to the guy who designed the album. He said, yeah, we kind of like this. And we had taken some pictures at our rehearsal space to maybe use. And he said, yeah, I think let me try and come up with something. So he made a few versions of it. This one, which is black with the sepia, but he also made a white one. But, this is the one that stuck.
One more question I have for you guys, kind of a big one, but after the record came out, what was the touring like? What did you guys do to promote this thing? Where did you play? Who did you play with? Do you remember any of that?
Mostly it was... right after it came out in Europe in early 98. I think the US version was released later on.
February 18th.
In Europe. Right.
Whoa.
So
that's today.
We played in Holland for the most part. I think we did it's not a tour, because you can't tour in Holland because it's such a small country. But every week from, let's say, Thursday to Sunday, we would play shows for, I don't know, at least a year in the Netherlands. And then we did a few short things, going to France and Germany for a week or something. And then it wasn't up until 99 where we did our first real European tour. And that was supporting all.
And you mentioned Southwest. Did you guys get to the States much or not really?
That was the only time we went there to play. It was South by Southwest, which was also in 98, by the way.
I do remember that. You're talking about promotion. At some point, Epitaph called us in to get to their office, the head office in Amsterdam, where we did an entire day of just doing interviews over the phone. And, I remember that. That was a bit weird for us. music all day. All right. So, yeah. And I think we spoke to media from all over Europe at that point, but I don't really remember any of them. Do you?
Trying to figure out why we never really did any touring in the U.S. I mean, it's way harder for a band from outside the U.S. to come and do shows there than the other way around, of course. But for some reason, it never happened where, when we went with Epitaph, we thought, well, this is... It's not a done deal, but it's going to make it a hell of a lot easier to maybe a tour in America.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't bring you over to promote the record, put you on maybe a tour with All or one of the other Epitaph bands.
Yeah.
Good question.
We don't know. We don't know.
I guess it never came up, right?
No.
Yeah.
We played a bunch of shows here, but
But that's also just reality. I mean,
Utopia again, right?
It's yeah. very, very rare for a European band to make the jump over to the US. And
yeah, because you have to be here all the time. I mean, that would be a huge commitment.
Yeah,
a lot of time away from home and
yeah,
costly. Well, guys, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and talking Head Cleaner with me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
It was fun for us too.
Before I let you go, is there anything about the record that I didn't cover? Anything you want to get out into the world about the album that I didn't ask about? Or
let me think for a second.
Any little trivia nuggets or anything?
No, we still look the same. On like now, when you look at the back seat.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you guys sitting in the same order. Love it.
You know what the funny thing is? You say the hat. What you see here, the Marshall hat.
Yeah.
It probably stands here in the other room.
Yeah, still have it.
You probably still have it.
We still have it.
Yeah. I think everything on there we still have. Guitar, the amps. Yeah, we still have everything.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's the same drum kit, though.
I don't have those.
No, it's different.
But what I said, it's not. It's really true that it's 26 years ago exactly today that it was released in Europe.
It was actually the
8th. Crazy.
That's crazy. When you ask it, it's today.
Dawned on you, yeah. This is it. It's kind of funny how that worked out.
I have to post it again on Instagram now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool. Well, guys, thanks again. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you making time and with the time change and everything and sticking with those technical difficulties at the beginning. But appreciate you. And
thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Huge fan. I always love this record. I loved your other records. I loved how you guys got a little bit more experimental. I love the self-titled 2005 record. I felt like that was kind of like a jump back to Head Cleaner a little bit. And
some of
the songs on there, just real big energy. I always really liked the self-titled one.
Cool.
Thanks.
Well, thanks.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks again. Yeah. Bye-bye. All right, such a great album. I have such a fondness for this record, and talking to the guys in the band was such a treat. I'd like to thank Jasper, Ronald, and Bob for joining me today to talk about the record, fill us in on the details of getting it recorded, coming over from overseas to meet up with Bill and Jason and Stefan in the recording studio. A lot of fun. I would like to thank Chris the Makes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to this podcast. It is so much fun to dive into these records, chat about songs, try to gather up the information on recording and writing and just everything we can, you know, to put it in this one place for you to get the full picture of albums that you've been listening to for however long you've been listening, whether it's that you've been listening since 1998 or if you just picked some of these records up last week. We hope you enjoy these stories. We hope you enjoy these details. Make sure you check us out on the socials. Do say hello. Join the chat or suggest the albums. You know, tell us your stories. How did you get into these bands? How did you find them? And, you know, check out other things we do on the socials. We do some top 10 lists on there. We post records, and it's all just for a love of music. We enjoy when you chime in. That's what we do. We talk records. So, until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Peace.